All right, guys. Sorry about that. I think, you know, Apple has created a new kind of problem, actually. never seen of. So brief context, you know, we are here to present a data integration platform, Apache Goblin. And LinkedIn, you know, is a creator of the Goblin project. And PayPal has recently started looking into that, and we are partnering with LinkedIn to use this at our own production system to solve some of our problem. So I'll be talking about how we use Apache Goblin at PayPal, and you know, Sudarshan is from LinkedIn team. We'll talk about more internals and architectures, and you know, what is the future plans for Apache Goblin. So I'm Jay. I work at PayPal and data integration platform team, and I'm a committer for Apache Eagle, and I contribute to Goblin and Airflow. So let me begin with a very basic, you know, introduction. Like, I think we use a lot of terms interchangeably, like movements, replications, integrations, and all of that. So just to define the definitions and category of this. So I think for us, the way we understand the movement is basically, you know, that any raw data movement from one place to another, and could be third-party vendor data, business data, reports, and stuff like that. But it's mostly comprises of moving a pure data. So that is what usually people get it as, just the movement. I mean, what's the big deal, right? But as we go on, the next stage is like a replication. So replication is typically between the same similar source and destination types, and you know, requires very tight data replication between them. And typically, platform comes with their own tools for that. So Hadoop, for Hadoop, there is a DistCP, and then for Teradata, there is a TPT. MySQL has their own. So a lot of, and Oracle has their own. So these are typically the replications, which is almost happens real time. And the third one, which is the which we really want to call it a data integration, is something that between the cross platform, source can be anything, destination can be anything, and it is typically also involve multiple sources, and then you know doing the joins and you know writing it to the target system. So those are the most complex types of the data integration use cases. Now, typically in a big, very big company, people have lots of different kind of sources, lots of different kind of targets, and they start with basic movements, and then they have their own replication systems, and then they create some custom to do the you know different disparate source of and destinations. But they end up in this situation. So this basically represent the you know the complexity and then the landscape of the data movement tools that company ends up with. Like a big company will have lots of such platforms to you know do the data movement. And every platform is basically optimized for that features that it, you know, source and target requires. But there is not really, and then, you know, the new sources and destinations are coming always. Like people want their data in Cassandra, they want it on Oracle, S3, and this is a never-ending, you know, list of source and targets. So ideally, we want one platform which can, you know, do all of these things, right? Here is another scenario. Data movement from point A to B is one thing, but then, you know, creating the data pipeline from all the way from one place to, you know, another, having hops and multiple stages of that in between is complex. So this is one of the use cases I'm showing here. So this is a typical way PayPal has data that goes from offline systems and then gets processed and then cross the zone, which is much more secure, and then goes to the production system. That's where the fraud data and the variables, most likely, it's mostly the machine learning variables which gets into there. That's where the production system uses those data. So the frequency of this update has to be like, you know, within hour or, you know, less than an hour. But you can see these are like a multi-stage process, like the data actually get actually, from one side, the data always, obviously, it gets generated on the online system. It ends up in the offline system, like Teradata is one of them. Some processing happens there. We move it to Hadoop for further processing. The delta calculation happens there because we don't want to just move everything there, crossing the zone. That's where we basically we leverage the Goblin to move the data. And for all the movements here, there's a in between stages, that Pacman symbol, that's basically the Goblin job that moves the data. So this way we create a chain of the Goblin jobs, which we call it a data pipeline workflow. And these jobs are stitched together in a workflow, and that creates a DAG. And it runs in from one step to the, all the way to sixth step. So this is one of the use cases at PayPal, the complex one. And let me say why we actually chose Apache Goblin. Obviously, there are some platforms. There are proprietary and non-proprietary open source projects for that does the data movement briefly. But everybody operates at a different scale. So Goblin is something that operates at the highest scale for us. And we have a terabytes of data that gets moved every day. So we have to use something scalable. Goblin already runs at LinkedIn at scale. I think Sudarshan will share more information on that scale. But you know, it solves the. We feel that the Goblin solves the data movement problem. It takes it as a distributed problem, than just point A to point B, single threaded and that kind of a simple thing. That's how it basically achieves the scalability. Obviously, it has. We have seen good performance and reliability on our proof of concept project we did last month. Because of this, I think it also brings a lot of operational efficiency, which is very important in a big company when you are moving terabytes of data, or sometimes it touches the petabyte. Being efficient operationally is very, very important for us, both for the cost reason and for also for the complexity for the operational team. And we see this platform as something generic. Like, we can always extend it. We can always add new source and targets, and that makes it immediately work for that new source and target. And there are lots of core features that we love about Goblin, and like throttling, schema registry integrations, and enforcements, all of that, post movement processing, compaction, things like that. That is really useful for us. So this is why we chose the Goblin. This is the current team at PayPal, the data integration platform team. We own a bunch of like a batch streaming, all sorts of solutions and platforms, and we are going as a Goblin as our next generation data movement platform. So before I hand it over to Sudarshan, if anybody has a question, feel free to ask.
Project the other slides.
The other one will be hard to find, actually.
Hard to find?
Because she did something. Yeah. Document viewer. This is Windows.
It's
downloaded in the...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, apologies for the hiccups, but hopefully let's get through this. We have the last presentation, I guess. Thanks, Jay, for talking about Goblin and how you guys are using Goblin in PayPal. It's very encouraging to hear these kinds of stories, like when we are building software, we tend to think mostly for our own use cases, but then when we find similar use cases from other companies, then it's kind of validates some of the choices that we make. So thanks for that. And it was very interesting that the complex picture that you showed, where you have tons of different source systems and sync systems, and then you build custom pipelines to connect each sourcing pair. That was exactly the problem that Goblin set out to achieve when we started building Apache Goblin in the first place. So for the rest of this presentation, I'm going to give LinkedIn's viewpoint as to how Goblin fits into our various use cases. And I'll mostly be focusing on some of the recent activities around Apache Goblin and what are the future directions and the next steps. By way of introduction, my name is Sudarshan. I'm a software engineer at LinkedIn. I've been there for a little less than a couple of years. So yeah, I've been with the data management team at LinkedIn all my time there. So the outline for the presentation, I'll first begin with some background on Goblin. Particularly, I want to set the context in terms of how Goblin powers the different use cases at LinkedIn and give you a sense of the scale at which it operates at LinkedIn. I'll then talk about, do a deep dive into the architecture that Goblin has. And then for the rest of the presentation, I'll be more focusing on our current initiatives, and in particular, like our recent work in supporting a streaming mode of execution, the challenges that we encountered while supporting this mode of execution, and some of the advances that we made, and then conclude the talk with some future directions, and then hopefully if we have some Q&A, then I'll try to address that. Cool. So this picture is kind of a very interesting one, at least for me. Like I always go back to this picture to sort of, you know, zoom out and see, like, you know, how Goblin fits into the overall data ecosystem at LinkedIn. So LinkedIn, hopefully you may have heard of us, and you're probably already using us in some measure. We are a social networking site that aims to provide like an economic opportunity for everyone. So our members interact with the LinkedIn platform in a variety of ways. They come to the website, you know, for either for job search. They might like, share, comment on articles in their newsfeed. They might click on the ad, sponsored content, or like, you know, they might be doing some people search, whatnot. So there's a variety of applications and services that LinkedIn provides for its members. And the members, each of these member actions results in some kind of a tracking event. So the tracking events like that that the members generate, like, you know, they are essentially logged into our distributed log service, which is Kafka. And things like, you know, where the users may do profile updates and such, like that might trigger, like, you know, reads, writes, and updates to our source of truth systems, which are backed by databases like Espresso, which is our internal key value store, MySQL, Oracle, and so on. And the tracking events and the changelog generated by these source of truth systems are then ingested into our large-scale data storage platform, which is Hadoop. And at this point, like, you know, this data is then consumed by a variety of, like, you know, analytics, machine learning pipelines, reporting pipelines, and so on. And they in turn generate some data that is derived from the data that is ETL'd onto Hadoop. And the derived data is then pushed into our secondary storage systems like Pinot, Search, Voldemort. I think Voldemort is no longer in use at LinkedIn, but like Venice, which is our derived key value store. And this derived data then powers online services like our recommender systems, like, you know, recommending people you may know, recommending articles, and so on. So that's sort of the entire life cycle of the data from the source into how it powers the applications and services at LinkedIn. So this orange rectangular box here is where sort of most of Goblin's use cases at LinkedIn reside. And I'm going to talk about that next. So sort of just zooming into that rectangular box, this slide here captures, like, you know, all of the use cases at LinkedIn in production that are powered by Goblin. On the on the extreme left, like, you know, we have the variety of different data sources, such as like an Oracle, MySQL, Salesforce, and then we have our data in motion storage system, which is Kafka, and all of that data, like, you know, either through changelog or through directly through Kafka, gets ETL'd by Goblin into our data storage system, which is Hadoop. Or it may get ingested into other data storage systems like Espresso. And then once the data is here into our large-scale storage, then we do some secondary processing on top of that. Like, you know, for instance, we might do compaction to merge, like, you know, small files into larger files, reduce the file count on HDFS. We might apply retention. We might do compliance. So this circular queue, the circular arrow here, essentially captures what we think of as data management operations on the ETL data, and then this data, which is may be consumed by our analytics and processing pipelines, is then egresses into our secondary storage systems like Venice, MySQL, or Kafka, to be consumed by online services. So that's sort of where Goblin fits into the different use cases at LinkedIn. In terms of, like, you know, just to give you a sense of scale, like, you know, Goblin ingests 200 terabytes of new data every day. We have 1,000 plus job executions, Goblin jobs running per day, like, you know, doing this ETL and data management. And we interact with, like, you know, 30 different source and destination systems, like, you know, just in terms of the diversity of the sources and things, like, you know, that's sort of the landscape that Goblin operates at LinkedIn. In terms of, like, you know, where we are in open source, Goblin was first open sourced in 2015. We became we incubated into an Apache project since 2017. We believe we have an active developer community which is growing, and in terms of, like, you know, the different companies that are using Goblin for their production use cases, we have quite a few of them here, and some pretty good looking ones there. Okay, so that sort of gives you the context for, like, you know, how Goblin operates inside LinkedIn. I just next want to sort of take a step back and say, compare Goblin with other data integration and data processing platforms. Like, we believe that, like, there are tons of, like, you know, very good data integration platforms that that can offer, like, you know, competing services that Goblin offers. So how do we compare and contrast all of these different platforms? So we choose, like, you know, four different criteria, like connector diversity, execution modes, the execution modes being, like, you know, the support for batch and streaming, the support for different variety of execution platforms, and finally, like, you know, out of the box support for like, you know, data management operations and so on, such as, like, you know, replication, retention, compaction, compliance, and so on. So we believe that, like, you know, Goblin, at least in terms of the first three criteria, like, you know, compares very favorably with the data integration as well as the data processing platforms. But really, like, you know, where we believe, like, you know, where Goblin stands out in comparison with the other platforms is its, like, you know, data set awareness and its support, out-of-the-box support for, like, you know, data management operations. So just to sort of reinforce, like, you know, the core value proposition for Goblin, we believe that, like, what Goblin offers or brings to the table is that the ability that you can author a pipeline once and run it everywhere. So you can run the pipeline either in a standalone mode, in a MapReduce mode, or in a cluster mode. But you don't need to keep changing your jobs. We believe that, like, you know, we can switch between a batch and a streaming mode of execution, or at least that's our aim, to allow users like, you know, easily switch between modes of execution via simple, easy to understand configuration changes. And I'll talk about that a little bit more. And then this is an interesting point here, like, you know, that Goblin scales both with your data ecosystem, both in terms of volume as well as in terms of complexity. And by that I mean, like, you know, so if you take a simple data pipeline use case where, like, you know, you have data in Kafka that you want to ETL into HDFS, initially you may start out with, hey, like, you know, I just have, like, you know, few tens of topics. So I might just spin off a Goblin job in a standalone mode that just, you know, ingests topic in a, the 10 topics in a, ETLs them into HDFS on a continuous basis. And then as your organization grows, you find that, like, now the volume of topics has grown from 10 to 1,000. So in a standalone mode no longer suffices. So you probably want to scale out your ETL pipeline as well. So you may want to deploy your Kafka to HDFS pipeline in a MapReduce mode or in a cluster mode where you have a bunch of workers that are doing the ETLing of your data. And then as your organizational complexity increases and you have more and more people consuming this data, then you find that, oh, we want to do other kinds of things, like, hey, I want to query this data using Hive and Presto. So I want to do things like not only land the data into HDFS, but I want to do other things, like, you know, I want to do Hive registration, I want to do, like, you know, some metadata export, and whatnot. So Goblin offers all of those kinds of auxiliary components, like, you know, out of the box to allow you to scale both in terms of volume and complexity. And finally, like, you know, unlike other platforms, we believe that, like, you know, Goblin can manage the entire lifecycle of your data. So, like, you know, things like retention and replication and so on are sort of provided out of the box. Okay, so given this background, I think the main focus of this presentation is to talk about the streaming mode of execution. So I'll be focusing on that a little bit. I'll be focusing on that primarily for the rest of the presentation. But before I do that, like, I want to give you a brief detour. I want to take a brief detour into the architecture of Goblin. So what does a typical data pipeline specified in Goblin look like, right? So this picture essentially captures that that view. So what I'm showing here in this picture are, like, you know, the top level constructs that Goblin supports, namely the source, the extractor, the converter, the quality checker, the writer, and the publisher. The source is essentially a construct that connects to the source system, that does the planning, that, like, you know, these are the work units that need to be executed on for this job, and essentially it sort of distributes the work units to the different tasks. Each task, so work unit in itself is essentially a logical unit of work. So for example, like, if you're talking about Kafka to HDFS, then your work unit is essentially the topic partition and the range of offsets that that particular task will consume from. The tasks could run in parallel, or they could be running in threads inside a thread pool. And each task in turn hosts an extractor, converter, quality checker, and a writer. What does the extractor do? The extractor will essentially connect to the source system and will start pulling records or stream records. And the converter can do things like, you know, schema projection, or, like, you know, decorating your record with some metadata, converting from one schema to the other, Avro to JSON conversion, and so on. Quality checker essentially ensures that, like, you know, you can hook in, like, you know, policies around, like, you know, what kind of records you want to accept and what kind of records you want to discard. So for instance, like, you know, you may see early records or late records, in which case, like, you know, you may have policies like, oh, anything that is older than 3 days, I just want to filter out. So all those kinds of policies can be specified in the quality checker. The writer essentially connects with your destination system and then is the one that is responsible for writing records to the destination system. And the data publisher is an optional, last step. And it is particularly useful for systems where atomicity is desired. So for instance, like, if you're writing data to Hadoop, you may want to ensure that, like, you know, either all of the files are published at one go or none of them is published at any time. So there's no sort of partial publishing of the data. So all of that logic can be embedded into the data publisher. Okay, so let me zoom out a little bit from the view of the logical pipeline to how that pipeline fits into the overall architecture of Goblin. So what we saw in the previous slide is essentially captured by the boxes that are colored green in this slide. The orange boxes essentially capture the runtime of Goblin. And so this runtime essentially has components that allows Goblin to schedule tasks and jobs. It is responsible for negotiating resources. And it is also has the logic for executing the tasks and tracking the state of the tasks. And the orange boxes are essentially the glue that connects the logical pipeline to the different deployment settings. And as I said, like, earlier in my presentation, Goblin supports, like, you know, standalone mode or a MapReduce mode, or you can run it in a cluster mode on YAML. The blue boxes here, the metadata store and the monitoring, are essentially components which allow for the monitoring and the running smooth operation of for Goblin jobs. So, for instance, the metadata store is responsible for managing watermarks, whereas, like, you know, the monitoring component is responsible for metrics emissions, tracking events, and so on. All of that which allows you to operate your pipelines in production at scale. I'm going to be focusing on the YARN mode of execution for the remainder of this presentation, and I'll be explaining how we operate a streaming pipeline in that mode. So this was supposed to be an animation, but anyway, like, it looks a little denser than what I originally wanted it to be. This slide essentially captures the overall architecture for Goblin on YARN. So initially, like, you know, so the sequence that we have for submitting a Goblin on YARN application, we have a Goblin YARN app launcher, which embeds a YARN client, and then it essentially talks to the resource manager to submit an application. And the resource manager then spins up a Goblin application master. This Goblin application master has a few services that it hosts, which includes the Yarn service, the job config manager, and then there's the security manager. I'll talk about the security manager in a little bit. But what the Yarn service does is that the job config manager essentially is polling for Goblin jobs. It essentially can receive Goblin jobs either through Kafka or through file system. And then once a new job comes in, then the app master will spin up worker container. Essentially the application master computes the work units and then talks to the zookeeper, talks to the Helix controller, and which is responsible for distribution of the work units to the workers. The Yarn service itself is responsible for, has a component called auto-scaling manager, which is responsible for scaling up and scaling down the workers as the workloads change, And given that we want our application to be a long-running application, then that poses a problem, particularly in Kerberized environments like Kerberos authentication-based environments like Hadoop, where your keytab logins expire after a period of 7 days, and so unless you re-login or refresh your delegation tokens, then your application just terminates prematurely. So to avoid that situation, we have Security Manager, which essentially does the keytab re-logins and then provides the new delegation tokens by writing that to a shared storage location like HDFS. And the security managers inside the Yarn containers then poll for these new tokens on the well-advertised shared location, and then they essentially add the new delegation tokens to their containers. So that sort of captures the overall architecture for Goblin on Yarn. So, before we think about the problem of streaming, how do batch and the streaming modes of execution compare and contrast with each other? So, in the batch mode, what happens really is that the amount of work that is done in every execution is finite. So, really, the source, all it needs to do at the beginning is to determine the amount of work that it will do in a particular run. It needs to acquire resources to be able to execute on that amount of work. It essentially does the execution, and then on a successful run, it needs to checkpoint the state, and then you repeat the whole batch process all over again. So, the advantage of a batch mode of execution is that it is cost efficient in terms of resource usage. It is deterministic in the sense that you can keep running the same job again and again, and you can achieve properties like idempotence. In case of any failure, there is some kind of repeatability to a batch mode of execution. The disadvantage is obviously is that if you have very strict latency requirements, then batch mode is not really the right approach. And if you start running the batch mode of operation in a micro batch mode, then really what ends up happening is that the container setup, the teardowns, and the checkpointing costs start dominating. Streaming, on the other hand, your work is unbounded, so you really your job is executing continuously, and so you have to figure out now that you need to checkpoint state periodically. So there is no notion of termination and checkpointing at the end. The advantage of the streaming mode of execution obviously is low latency for data consumption, and the disadvantage is that we need to have a lot of sophistication built into the streaming mode of operation to be able to deal with change. And I'll talk about what those kinds of changes are. And also it is higher cost, both in terms of operations, in terms of resource usage. So very often you would end up having to over-provision resources. And also in terms of developer cost, so that you need to build in a lot of monitoring and debuggability into your pipeline to be able to run a streaming pipeline nonstop. So when Goblin thought about the whole batch versus streaming question, our approach was that, like, you know, we want to be able to move back and forth between batch and streaming, and we don't want to impose a burden on the users of Goblin to essentially maintain, like, you know, two different job configurations. So really, like, what we want to be able to do is to, like, you know, specify some simple, easy to understand configs that will allow the users to switch back and forth between the batch and the streaming mode of execution. So as it is today, like, you know, these are the simple set of configurations that need to be modified. Don't get fixated on the configs themselves, but, like, you know, in terms of, like, you know, what they actually mean. So here the first configuration is essentially saying that, hey, enable the streaming mode of execution. The second configuration is essentially saying that how frequently you want the data to be published or made visible to the end users. And the last two configurations are saying that, oh, like, you know, use a streaming-specific watermark store and a streaming-specific publisher. Now, I want to emphasize that, like, this is the state right now, but we are actually working towards sort of, like, making sure that, like, you know, the batch and the streaming are unified both on the watermark storage as well as in terms of the data publisher. So eventually, we hope to get to a state where, like, you know, the batch to streaming switch can happen just by specifying, like, you know, the top two configurations, like enabling streaming, and if you enable streaming, like, you know, how often you want the data to be published. So there are a number of challenges in supporting the streaming mode of execution, and I'll first enumerate what those challenges are, and then talk about how we address each of those challenges in Goblin. The first one that I already alluded to is that, like, in the streaming mode, we no longer can wait until the end of the execution to start checkpointing state. So we need to have a mechanism wherein, like, you know, we need to be able to checkpoint state periodically. We need to detect and respond to changes, and the changes could come in a variety of ways. One could be the fact that, like, you know, your data itself changes, so either through some kind of a schema change upstream. So we need to be able to detect those changes and respond to them, and or there could be changes in the environment itself. So for instance, you could have a new Kafka topic partition added, or you could have a situation where a container is stalled for whatever reason, or it is in an unhealthy state. Resource management is very tricky. So we want to have the ability to dynamically allocate or release containers as new jobs or new topics get added. Security, as I already mentioned, for long-running applications, if you are in a Kerberized environment, you need to be able to detect or handle situations where your tokens expire or your logins expire and so on. And finally, like, you know, to have an always running pipeline, we need to build adequate debugging and monitoring, both in terms of, like, logging and metrics. So when we started working on streaming, like, you know, these were some of the common use cases that were showing up. So for instance, like, you know, you want to ingest data from Kafka to one of these destination systems, Elasticsearch, Hadoop HDFS, or Kafka itself. So it can do, like, you know, Kafka to Kafka mirror making using Goblin. For the rest of this presentation, I'll mostly be focusing on the Kafka to HDFS, because I think of all the different destinations, I think the HDFS is perhaps the most interesting and more complicated of them. So checkpointing. So why is this a problem in the context of streaming? So as I mentioned already, in a batch pipeline, the work units are finite, and so the data publish and checkpointing can be done upon completion of all the tasks. However, in the streaming case, your work units are unbounded, and so the tasks are always running. So we really need to publish data periodically and then be able to checkpoint state. So how do we handle that in the context of streaming? Well, we have a Goblin provides a special control message, which is called as the flush control message. So essentially what we do here is that, like, the extractor will periodically send a flush control message down the pipeline. And each of the constructs in Goblin will essentially pass through the control message all the way down to the writer. The writer, when it receives the flush control message, we'll essentially know that, hey, now it's time to checkpoint. So it's going to just close all the files that it was working on, and then it is going to acknowledge the flush back. And the extractor, on receiving the flush back, will essentially publish the files. So essentially all the files which were committed by the task will be moved to their final published location, and then we'll commit the state to the state store. How do we handle changes? So one of the changes that I talked about was schema changes, and this kind of schema changes happen all the time. So to handle that situation, we have a converter that essentially is responsible for detecting schema changes. So this converter essentially tracks what is the latest schema, and whenever there is a new schema available, then it essentially detects that, and then generates a metadata update control message that is then passed down the construct chain. The data writer, which is the last construct in the task, will essentially receive this metadata update control message, and then will decide that, oh, now I need to close all my open files, and then will acknowledge the control message. In terms of the data layout, so we support all the common storage formats like Avro, ORC, Parquet, Text. The writes, we have out of the box support for doing partition data writes. So if you want to write data into time bucketed folders, Goblin provides those partition data write support. We have the ability to do late and early data filtering. And finally, because we do an atomic rename, we don't have the situation of any partially written files that are made visible to the consumers. And in terms of the guarantees that the streaming pipeline provides, for now we are only provide an at least once delivery. We do run into situations where we have a duplicate data publishing. So for instance, we may have split brain type scenarios where there are two concurrently running tasks processing or working on the same work units and might independently write files to the final published location. Or we might have situations where we, the process dies with partial commits. So the data is published, but we haven't checkpointed the offsets. So the rerun will essentially pick the old data again and then publish the same data again. So we are actively working on fixing some of these issues, and hopefully we'll get to a state where we can provide exactly once delivery guarantees. What about any environment related changes? So what are the different kinds of environment challenges, changes? So we can have new topic partitions that might arrive. We might have containers which are stalled or lagging. So to be able to respond to these kinds of changes, we came up with a replanner, which essentially sits outside the Goblin on Yarn cluster, and it runs as a scheduled job that periodically polls Kafka for any new work units. And in case of any new topics or new topic partitions, it will essentially submit a job to the Goblin on Yarn cluster and trigger a restart of an already running job. Replanning based on consumer lag metrics is something that we are currently working on, and it's not available yet. As I mentioned earlier, we want to have the ability to scale our containers in response to the changing workloads. So we have implemented an auto-scaling manager that can essentially, you can dynamically request containers, new containers from Yarn in the middle of an already running application. Or if your containers are essentially done with all the tasks and are doing nothing, then we essentially release the containers back to the pool. So replanner triggered auto scaling is something that that we are currently working on. How do we handle security and authentication in Kerberized environments? What we do is today the application security manager essentially does the keytab relogins and provides the new delegation tokens, and then submits a Helix control message, which is then picked up by all the containers, the Yarn containers, and then they pick up the new delegation token and then add it to the container. So for the future, since the keytab based approach is somewhat not very secure, for very secure environments, we are going to work on providing some integration with key management services. So for logging and metric monitoring, so we ran into some very interesting challenges with regard to logging particularly. So by default, Yarn only aggregates logs when the application finishes. So which is not a very desirable, particularly if you have a long running application that runs for weeks or months perhaps. You can't wait until the application finishes for the logs to show up on HDFS. So we have implemented a log copying service that runs, that is a hosted service inside every container that periodically rotates the logs and essentially ships the logs to HDFS. This allows users to be able to debug their, to do some offline debugging. In terms of metrics and monitoring, we have implemented services inside the extractor that essentially exports the Kafka consumer metrics periodically, which get returned to Kafka back or to our reporting services or like our metrics dashboard services, which are internal to LinkedIn, but can be, we can plug it with like things like Graphite or InfluxDB and so on. We also export container health metrics, which monitor CPU, memory usage, garbage collection stats. And yeah, so as I already mentioned, like, you know, the metrics can be either emitted back to Kafka or to Graphite or InfluxDB or any of the favorite reporting dashboarding tools. So to summarize, really, what I presented here is that, like, you know, we have an end-to-end working solution for long-running data ingestion jobs. Our streaming mode of execution can be used for some of the common use cases like Kafka to HDFS, Kafka to Kafka, Kafka to Elasticsearch, and so on. We have made significant enhancements to Goblin on Yarn, being able to add auto-scaling capabilities and replanning capabilities. And we are working on a number of new exciting features to add to the streaming mode of execution, particularly for the Kafka to HDFS pipeline, doing things like inline hive registration. So once we land data into like, you know, hourly or daily buckets, like, you know, we want to be able to register those partitions with hives so that Hive and Presto users can start querying and consuming the data. We want to do metrics-based replanning. So, like, you know, using the consumer lag metrics, CPU utilization metrics, and so on to be able to decide, like, you know, when to scale out or scale in. We want to integrate with Iceberg. So we want to power use cases where, like, you know, incremental compute and things like that. And, so much of what I discussed is still internal. So we are working very actively to sort of make it available to the open source. Please stay tuned for any updates on that. So that's hopefully in the next month or so, like, you know, we'll have the entire Kafka to HDFS recipe out there documented for users to give it a try. And, feel free to read our documentation, give us feedback, try out Goblin. And of course, contributions are always welcome. So. Cool. This is the Goblin team here.
I have a question. So when you are copying the data, is there any way by which you maintain the sequence of the data?
Yeah, so we guarantee that we guarantee in-order delivery on a per partition basis for Kafka, but across partitions there is no guarantee of ordering.
You mentioned about a task init where you extract, convert, there are like multiple stages.
Right.
What if one stage fails for one particular unit of work? So in that case, the entire job fails or there is a configuration?
So there is a configuration. So you can say that, hey, like you can tolerate some number of failures or like some percentage of failures within a window of time. So that's part of, like, you know, the quality checker contract, like, you know, there you can configure your policies, so it's configurable basically.
So quality checker, but works on the unit of work or for the entire job?
It works on a unit of work basically. So its quality checker resides inside a task. Mm-hmm. So each task has its own commit phase, and each task decides whether the commit is successful or not based on some configurable policies, such as percentage of failed records, and so on.
How easy it is, like, if you have to build something copier from Kafka or like something which is open source to some other protocol which is a proprietary. So if you have to build such component.
I see. Yeah, so it is very, very pluggable. So you can, all you need to do is to implement certain interfaces. So for instance, like, let's say that you want to write to a proprietary destination sync, right? all you need to do is to really implement the data writer interface that we provide. So the rest of your, let's say your source is Kafka and the destination is Aerospike or something like that, and you all you need to do is to just implement the data writer for Aerospike, and then you can just reuse the rest of the framework. So yeah, it is very pluggable, very easy. I mean, for developers, I would assume that it's not very hard to overcome that barrier.
You have to share, I mean, just Aerospike, right? Because like a week or two.
Sure.
You also mentioned that the manager basically manages the scaling by checking some data statistics.
Yeah, so that's still work in progress. It's not available yet. So what we really want to do is to, like, the metrics that we are emitting from the containers, like CPU, memory, or consumer lag, and so on, we want to be able to use that, like, you know, some maybe using some simple rules like, hey, the CPU is 100% utilized and the consumer lag is growing in two successive 5-minute intervals, then it's time to like add new containers perhaps. So things like that. So that is, like, we haven't really come up with an algorithm for doing that. Like, we have the components that we can use to build upon that kind of a solution. So hopefully we'll get there soon. So.
And on the streaming side, there were two properties. One to say whether the streaming is enabled, and the second was after what duration I need.
Correct.
To do. Right? So what happens if the job is already running, mm-hmm. has not completed, mm-hmm. The streaming batch, mm-hmm. but if some other job starts in parallel, is there any check to make sure that doesn't happen?
Yeah, so today, like, we, at least in the cluster mode, like, to prevent concurrent executions of the same job, which is what you're asking,
yeah.
We use the job name property. So, for instance, the cluster knows that, oh, there is already another instance of this job that is running, so it will essentially skip the second job that might be submitted.
But if there is any security data about this running thing, basically the server crashed and this metadata was not updated or something?
No, so this is all in memory. So, okay. Yeah, so the upon when you bootstrap a Goblin on Yarn cluster, so it maintains an in-memory map of all the currently running jobs.
Okay.
So if there is another job with the same job name or the job property that gets submitted, then it's going to just say that, hey, this is the same job as the other one, and then going to skip the execution of that job.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. All right. Cool. Thank you, guys.